Chapter 32, Did Man Coexist with Dinosaurs?
Ah, springtime. It's finally here. You've waited all year for this wonderful season. Not too hot, not too cold. You sit in your backyard in a lounge chair and pull out that book you've been waiting to dive into. A glass of iced tea sits beside you just waiting to cool you off. But little do you know that something totally unexpected, something absolutely horrendous is about to cool your life. Suddenly, the beautiful blue skies are replaced by ominous swirling clouds. The clouds change from white to a dirty brown and then to a blackish hue that darkens the sky. The light of the sun is gone as the wind arrives. First a little, then a little more, until at last things begin to move. The trees not only sway but the branches begin to break off. Your patio furniture begins to slide, spilling your iced tea, then breaking the glass. But that's not the only glass breaking.
Soon the windows of your home begin to shatter as you spy a giant snake-like twirling mass come down out of the sky. As it touches the ground, everything around it explodes into bits and pieces, including homes, trees, and any structure that was unfortunate to be in its path.
For the first time in your life, you witnessed with your own eyes that apparently pigs do fly, at least in one of these.
In fact, that's not the only thing flying around you, so are cars, homes, trucks, trailers, and yes, even people.
You see them screaming but hear no words over the deafening roar of this atmospheric beast. And just as quick as it came, so it left. But what it left behind was an utter trail of devastation.
Wherever it touched, it looked like a bomb had exploded, annihilating everything in its path. Of course, I'm talking about the fearful force of a tornado.
Now folks, how many of you like to be lounging around in a tornado? Yeah, most of us wouldn't want to even if we did get to see a pig fly, right? And the reason is obvious. Hello, they're pretty scary, aren't they? Slightly. And yet, here's the irony. Most people today are totally fearful of going through a twister, but they have absolutely no fear of their maker. Why? Because there is no fear of God, before their eyes. And that means they're in a heap of trouble. Therefore, in order to help these arrogant people hopefully become more humble people, we're going to continue in our study, The Witness of Creation. And what we've been doing is taking a look at the five different evidences of creation that God has left behind for us, showing us that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal, intimate relationship with Him, the Creator of the universe, before it's too late. And so far we've seen the first evidence God left behind for us, showing us this amazing truth is the evidence of an intelligent creation. And then we saw the second evidence was the evidence of a young creation. And then we saw the third evidence was the evidence of a special creation. And then we saw the fourth evidence was the evidence of a judged creation. And then last time we saw the fifth evidence was the evidence of a fearful creation. And there we saw this is the ultimate deceit of the devil today. He has hijacked the true purpose, identity, and history of the dinosaurs to get people to supposedly not believe in God, when the whole time they actually serve as a powerful proof for the existence of God. And there we saw the Bible not only does mention dinosaurs, and that God was the one who made them, but God also used them to teach Job and us today to what? To fear Him. To have a healthy fear of God. Remember the lesson? Hey Job, if you're afraid of these big giant dinosaurs that you see with your own eyes naturally, why aren't you afraid of me, the Maker, spiritually? And it wasn't just the fear of keeping our mouths shut and not talking back to God. That's a good step. But it was the ultimate fear, the fear of the horrible consequences of not getting right with God before it was too late, namely going to hell. But fortunately, God's very merciful to us. He keeps answering our questions even when He doesn't have to. The second question concerning dinosaurs is, did man coexist with dinosaurs? You see, you might be thinking, now wait a minute. If God is the one who created the dinosaurs and He used them as an object lesson to teach man, then does that mean dinosaurs coexisted with man? Of course. The Bible not only mentions them. The Bible says man coexisted with them. But don't take my word for it. Let's listen to God's.
Genesis 1:24-31. And God said, Let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creatures that move along the ground, and wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created man in his own image, in the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground. Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the air and all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food. And it was so. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day.
Now folks, as you can see, the Bible clearly says that man was not only created on day six, but what? So were all the land animals, right? And this would obviously include the dinosaurs, right? Of course. All means all. And not so surprisingly, the Bible paints a completely different picture of what the original creation was like prior to the fall of man and the flood of Noah, like this person shares.
According to the Bible, dinosaurs first existed around 6,000 years ago. God made the dinosaurs, along with the other land animals, on day 6 of the creation week. Adam and Eve were also made on day 6, so dinosaurs lived at the same time as people, not separated by eons of time. Dinosaurs were nothing more than giant lizards in the Garden of Eden. Dinosaurs lived with Adam and Eve. They were big lizards, and lizards never stopped growing. When God created the world, dinosaurs were one of his creations. God created all the animals. God made everything in the entire universe, people, stars, planets and all that there is, Exodus 20:11, Genesis chapter 1, John 1:3. Like Adam, the bodies of the first dinosaurs were formed from the dust of the earth. Man and dinosaurs lived at the same time. The first man and woman, Adam and Eve, were close friends of God. And they were masters over all his wonderful creatures, Genesis 1:26 and verse 28. Adam and his family were meant to enjoy the animals and rule over them forever with love. In those first, early days the earth was a beautiful paradise. Everything was happy and perfect, just as God intended. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have lived in those days? God brought many animals to Adam for his personal inspection, the dinosaurs may have been included. God watched to see what Adam thought of all these wonderful creatures. He waited while Adam made up a name for each one, Genesis 2:19. Each new animal must have been an interesting surprise, displaying their creator's power and creativity. Why did God invent so many different kinds of beautiful, interesting and surprising animals? Perhaps because he wanted to delight man with his power, wisdom and love. Part of God's purpose for creating the particular types of dinosaurs that become very large was surely to impress man. Dinosaurs showed the great power of the Creator. No matter how big these creatures got, Adam knew God was always far greater. God designed every part of them, right down to the smallest cell. Even the largest dinosaur was like an obedient puppy in God's wise, powerful hands. It is interesting to think about the original world that God created. Things have changed so much since then. Everything was perfect, but then came sin. Sin ruined the perfect beauty of God's creation and brought trouble, death, suffering and other bad things into all of man's kingdom, Genesis 3:16-24, Romans 5:12 and chapter 8 verses 20-22, 1 Corinthians 15:21-22. Thorns and thistles, disease-producing germs and blood-sucking parasites, fighting and killing, all developed sometime after the first sin. To this day, all people continue to disobey God in many different ways.
And might I add, even the sin of lying about the true origins of man and dinosaurs. But the point is this. Wow. What a world it must have been back then, huh? Too bad Adam and Eve sinned. We could have still been coexisting with the dinosaurs as they did way back then. In fact, according to the Bible, we not only know that dinosaurs coexisted with man, but we also know according to the Bible that it is impossible for dinosaurs to have existed prior to existence of man.
Romans 5:12 and verse 14. Therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin, and in this way death came to all men, because all sinned. Nevertheless, death reigned from the time of Adam to the time of Moses, even over those who did not sin by breaking a command, as did Adam, who was a pattern of the one to come.
As you can clearly see, the Bible teaches that death did not enter the world until Adam had sinned. What we have to deal with today, death, bloodshed, disease, and suffering, were not part of God's original creation until Adam blew it. And so that obviously means that there could be no death of dinosaurs prior to this fateful event, let alone death of them for supposedly millions of years. Looks like evolution's got it wrong again. Shocker. And herein lies the problem. Even though, as we just saw, the Bible clearly teaches that man really did coexist with the dinosaurs, the problem is the lie of evolution has once again come in and tried to rewrite the true history of dinosaurs. They say in essence that the Bible is a book of lies and that man never coexisted with dinosaurs. Rather, they say that man and dinosaurs are actually supposedly separated by 10 of millions of years, right? I mean, isn't that what the TV and schools say? Haven't we heard that for decades now? And again, the only reason why people believe this fairy tale, and instead call the Bible a fairy tale, is because thanks to the power of mass media and mass education, they've been able to repeat this lie loud enough, long enough, and often enough, until the people believe it. By and large, people aren't presented with the biblical version, and so how will they ever know, let alone check out the facts for themselves? And to make matters worse, the whole time the evolutionist is teaching this stuff, it comes across as if this dinosaur business is an exact precise science and their conclusions can always be trusted. How dare you question their authority, right? But the first way we know that the Bible is right and evolution is wrong concerning the coexistence of man with dinosaurs is evolution is not without mistakes. You see, the problem is, evolution is not only not an exact science, but most people have no idea just how much guesswork is involved in this so-called science, including their version of dinosaurs. And it's not just guesswork involved, it's a whole bunch of flat-out mistakes involved, as this researcher points out.
You have probably heard of the great Brontosaurus. This is the dinosaur most people know best. Millions have seen it in books and advertising. Unfortunately, the Brontosaurus never really existed, even though it was pictured in almost every dinosaur book and museum for the last 100 years. The dinosaur was discovered with the head missing. To make the skeleton complete, a scientist added a skull found 3 or 4 miles away. But no one else knew this. The skeleton actually belonged to a type of Diplodocus. The skull was from an Apatosaurus. Putting a dinosaur skeleton together is not easy. It is often like putting together a very difficult jigsaw puzzle, with many of the pieces missing or damaged. The skeletons are usually very incomplete. Many dinosaur fossils are discovered badly damaged. Bones are often found crushed or bent by the great weight of the dirt and rock above. Sometimes parts from different creatures are mixed together. This just adds to the confusion. Unfortunately, some scientists have not been careful enough in their descriptions of dinosaurs. They have told grand stories of how dinosaurs looked and behaved. All of these descriptions are based on guesswork, the imaginations of people who have never seen a living dinosaur. Some scientists have made complete pictures of dinosaurs based on just a single bone or tooth or leg. Such pictures are based on many guesses and very little facts. The scientists' ideas often turn out to be wrong when more facts are discovered. Dinosaur fossils are not found with labels or photographs attached showing what the animals looked like. That is why no pictures of dinosaurs are exactly right. Every dinosaur painting is sure to contain at least some wrong information. No 20th century artist ever saw the living, breathing animals, complete with skin, flesh, and color. For instance, imagine never having seen or heard of a poodle or a peacock. One day you find the jumbled bones of it buried in the ground. You try to put the bones together to form a skeleton. And then you try to draw a picture of what the animal looked like when alive. But bones cannot tell the whole story. Even if you are a very good artist, it would be a miracle if you drew a true picture of a poodle or a peacock just from the bones and your imagination. If scientists could climb into a time machine and travel to the past, they could get much better information. Only then would they know the true appearance of dinosaurs, or what they ate, and how they really behaved. Scientists might be very surprised what they would learn. The first dinosaur that was assembled was in 1841. They made many goofs. It was an iguanodon. What they thought was a horn on its nose later turned out to be its thumb.
In fact, folks, they not only have made many mistakes as you can see with their version of dinosaurs, but not so surprisingly, neither do they have any real proof of their version of dinosaurs, like this person points out.
Evolutionists claim that dinosaurs evolved from some reptile that had originally evolved from amphibians. But they cannot point to any clear transitional, in-between, forms to substantiate their argument. Dinosaur family trees in evolutionary books show many distinct types of dinosaurs, but only hypothetical lines join them up to some common ancestor. The lines are dotted because there is no fossil evidence. Evolutionists simply cannot prove their belief in a non-dinosaur ancestor for dinosaurs. Evolutionists claim that dinosaurs evolved over millions of years. They imagine that one kind of animal slowly changed over long periods of time to become a different kind of animal. For instance, they believe that amphibians changed into reptiles, including dinosaurs, by this gradual process. This would mean, of course, that there would have been millions of creatures during that time that would be in between, as amphibians evolved into reptiles. Evidence of these transitional forms, as they are called, should be abundant. However, many fossil experts admit that not one unquestionable transitional form between any group of creatures and another has been found anywhere. If dinosaurs evolved from amphibians, there should be, for example, fossil evidence of animals that are part dinosaur and part something else. However, there is no proof of this anywhere. In fact, if you go into any museum, you will see fossils of dinosaurs that are 100% dinosaur, not something in between. There are no 25%, 50%, 75%, or even 99% dinosaurs, they are all 100% dinosaur. If God designed and created dinosaurs, they would have been fully functional, designed to do what they were created for, and would have been 100% dinosaur. This fits exactly with the evidence from the fossil record. The story we have all heard from movies, television, newspapers, and most magazines and textbooks is that dinosaurs lived millions of years ago. According to evolutionists, the dinosaurs ruled the Earth for 140 million years, dying out about 65 million years ago. However, scientists do not dig up anything labeled with those ages. They only uncover dead dinosaurs, i.e., their bones, and their bones do not have labels attached telling how old they are. The idea of millions of years of evolution is just the evolutionist's story about the past. No scientist was there to see the dinosaurs live through this supposed dinosaur age. In fact, there is no proof whatsoever that the world and its fossil layers are millions of years old. No scientist observed dinosaurs die. Scientists only find the bones in the here and now, and because many of them are evolutionists, they try to fit the story of the dinosaurs into their view.
Wow. So much for being an exact science. Oh yeah, how dare we question their authority, right? Now here's my point. If these guys can and do, as we just saw, make mistakes like this concerning the origins and history of dinosaurs, then gee, could it be that evolution's whole version on the history and origins of dinosaurs could also be one big mistake? I think so. In fact, as we are going to see throughout our study, I know so. The second way we know that the Bible is right and evolution is wrong concerning the coexistence of man with dinosaurs is dinosaurs were not ingesting meat. You see, you might be thinking, now wait a minute here. If mankind coexisted with dinosaurs, like the Bible clearly says, then how did man continue to exist? I mean, wouldn't the dinosaurs have eaten him up and terrorized him? That doesn't sound like much of a paradise to me. And that's true. Dinosaurs chasing you around the Garden of Eden trying to eat you constantly would not have been a very good paradise, and God certainly wouldn't have called that type of existence as being very good. Fortunately, that's not the type of coexistence that God portrays in the original creation with man and dinosaurs. Once again, evolution has it wrong. Shocker. The first way we know man and dinosaurs coexisted in a peaceful environment is because in the beginning dinosaurs were vegetarians. As we saw in the last section in A Judged Creation, the command to eat meat did not come from God until after the time of Noah's flood.
Genesis 9:3. Everything that lives and moves will be food for you. Just as I gave you the green plants, I now give you everything.
This may not have been God's original design, but due to the traumatic effects of the flood on the world, as one researcher points out, it might very well have become a necessity. Meat eating would have been encouraged by the flood. The flood was the world's greatest disaster. It destroyed all the world's huge, lush forests of plant life. Until new forests grew, there was much less food. The flood would have left a certain number of decaying animal bodies unburied on the earth's surface. The bodies would have been tempting meals for hungry, sharp-toothed animals. It must have been much harder to survive in the world after the flood. Since food was no longer so abundant, some animals were forced to compete. This would cause quarrels and fights, even among animals in the same family. Plants growing in the soils of the destroyed earth would have had less protein and vitamins than before, especially in certain areas of the world. With an increasing taste for meat, hunger could have driven some animals to kill for food, instead of waiting for dead bodies to turn up. Animals needed to feed their hungry families. Hunger and starvation can make some creatures desperate and vicious. The point is, meat eating only became an option for food after the flood. Prior to the flood, when man first coexisted with dinosaurs, everyone, including the animals, was vegetarian.
Genesis 1:29-30. Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the air and all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food. And it was so.
And so, as you can see, Adam and Eve weren't screaming their heads off running night and day in total fear of dinosaurs constantly trying to hunt them down and eat them. Everyone, including the dinosaurs, were vegetarian. It was, after all, called a paradise, the Garden of Eden, not the Garden of Eden. But you might be thinking, come on now. Have you seen the teeth on many of the dinosaurs? Those things are not only huge, some of them are razor sharp. Surely this is an indication that they were meat eaters. Actually, no. Just because an animal has large and even sharp teeth doesn't necessarily mean they used them to eat meat, like this man shares.
Although he had very sharp teeth, a lot of animals who have sharp teeth today are not carnivores, but use them to open fruit and eat vegetables. Having sharp teeth has nothing to do with an animal being a meat eater or not. It just means it has big sharp teeth. Many animals today have sharp teeth but are basically vegetarian. The giant panda has sharp teeth like a meat eater, but it eats bamboo. Perhaps the panda's teeth were beautifully designed to eat bamboo. To explain why a giant panda has teeth like many meat eaters, evolutionists have to say that the giant panda evolved as a meat eater and then switched to bamboo. Different species of bats have long sharp teeth, but they only eat various kind of fruit or nectar. Bears have teeth similar to those of a big cat, e.g. a lion, but some bears are vegetarian, and many, if not most, are mainly vegetarian. Before sin, God described the world as very good, Genesis 1:31. Some cannot accept this concept of perfect harmony because of the food chain that they observe in today's world. However, one cannot look at the sin-cursed world and the resultant death and struggle and use this to reject the Genesis account of history. Everything has changed because of sin. That's why Paul describes the present creation as groaning, Romans 8:22. One must look at the world through Bible eyes to understand it.
And speaking of understanding the world through the eyes of the Bible, the biblical account also helps explain some of the recent findings about the infamous Tyrannosaurus Rex, which by the way is always pictured as one of the most fiercest of all meat-eating dinosaurs, or was it?
The sharp teeth and claws of some dinosaurs have made people think that they were mean, vicious animals. The Tyrannosaurus Rex is often pictured as a horrible killer, attacking every dinosaur in sight. But this may not be true at all. New research suggests that the Tyrannosaurus would not be able to move very quickly. Most other dinosaurs could probably have gotten away from him easily. Fossil evidence indicates that Tyrannosaurus walked in a stooped-over, hunched position and probably waddled like a duck. There are other reasons to think that Tyrannosaurs were not super killers. Their teeth were not rooted very well and might have snapped off in any real battle. Tyrannosaurus Rex's small front legs seem far too weak for grabbing and killing large dinosaurs. In fact, they were too short to even reach his mouth. If we look at three other dinosaurs very much like Tyrannosaurus, even more problems can be seen with the idea that they were super killers. Killing dinosaurs, biting through bones and tearing off hunks of meat should leave definite signs of tooth wear. Sometimes a tooth would have been broken or lost. An Albertosaurus was found with teeth that show almost nowhere. The tips and delicate edge serrations are said to be in almost perfect condition. Yet this Tyrannosaur was an adult. The Dilophosaurus had two high, paper-thin bone crests on its head. It doesn't seem very likely that this delicate headgear could keep from breaking off if the dinosaur made its living as a scavenger, greedily tearing into the insides of dead dinosaurs. If he was a fierce eater of live dinosaurs, the thin crests would have certainly been ruined. The Spinosaurus had long, delicate spines attached to its backbone. Some of these stood straight up in the air 6.5 feet high, taller than most men. These spines could have been very easy to damage in a fierce fight with a heavy dinosaur. True fierce meat eaters are smooth and sleek, like the tiger, lion, polar bear and wolf. They don't have any delicate spines or crests to get in their way and cause pain in a chase and fight. Perhaps the guess that tyrannosaurs were aggressive brontosaur killers is completely wrong. Could it be that tyrannosaurs were mostly plant eaters, not meat eaters? The shape of their teeth alone can't tell us what they ate. Perhaps they used their sharp teeth and claws to tear up tough plants and fruits, not dinosaurs. Obviously, sharp teeth can serve other purposes than simply cutting meat, just as kitchen knives can be used for cutting carrots as well as steaks. Many sharp-toothed animals living today are plant eaters and rarely, or never, eat flesh. A few of many examples include the giant panda, the large Australian fruit bat, and some apes and bears.
But you might be thinking, okay, that's interesting about the Tyrannosaurus rex and all, but what about the dinosaurs that had not so much the big giant gnarly teeth, as they had big giant gnarly horns? Surely they were used to spear and kill other animals for meat, right? Nope. In fact, new findings on bighorn dinosaurs such as the Triceratops also tells a different story from what we're used to.
Some dinosaurs, like the Triceratops, had bony spikes on their heads. Others had spikes on their backs and elsewhere. If basic types of horns and spikes like these were originally created by God, then we know something about their purpose. They were not meant for fighting other dinosaurs. The head horns may have been used for getting food by lifting thick foliage. They could be used for poking, rooting or turning plants. Dinosaurs like the Triceratops had very strong jaws and replaceable teeth. Using their extremely strong jaw muscles, they could slice through very tough plants, even good-sized branches and roots. Dinosaurs like this could even have chewed on tree trunks. Some insects have horns similar to those of dinosaurs. It is interesting that scientists used to think that the big, sharp horns of some great horned beetles were meant for stabbing other beetles. Actually, the horns are mostly used to pry or lift.
So why did God make these dinosaurs with such big teeth and such big horns? Well, as one guy points out, maybe they were God's original big giant lawn mowing machines.
Dinosaurs were not the only animals that grew very large. The fossils show there once were giant kangaroos, giant deer, giant birds, giant dragonflies, giant bears and bison. There were even giant beavers, 8 feet long. Even many plants grew much larger in ancient times. All animals, including the first dinosaurs, were created to benefit mankind in one way or another. God's exact purpose for the various dinosaurs is still a mystery. Perhaps the larger dinosaurs kept certain types of lush plant life under control and cleared paths through the forest. Using their long necks, some dinosaurs could have eaten foliage at the tops of tall trees. In a thick forest, this would let light come down to the ground so smaller plants would have a chance to grow.
The second way we know man and dinosaurs coexisted in a peaceful environment is because in the beginning dinosaurs weren't all big. Another misconception about dinosaurs is not only that they were mean, ferocious meat eaters chasing everything around, but that every single one of them was massively giant just waiting to squish you on the ground. The facts are,
of course, some dinosaurs were very large, weighing in at an estimated 80 tons and standing 40 feet high. But the average size of a dinosaur, however, was probably about that of a small horse or even a sheep. In fact, some were as small as chickens, and others were even smaller. The Saltopus was really tiny, no bigger than a house cat. Most of the dinosaurs killed by the flood were less than 15 inches long, not including their tails, which made them more than twice as long. In museums, Most people never see the small dinosaurs because the jumbo-sized ones are so much more impressive.
I don't know about you, but I just don't get a picture of Adam and Eve screaming, "Oh no! Here comes the Chickenosaurus Rex! Run! Run! Run!" The point is, yes, many dinosaurs were quite big, but the average size of them weren't, and hence didn't make them a big threat issue. The third way we know man and dinosaurs coexisted in a peaceful environment is because in the beginning dinosaurs weren't the rulers. Speaking of not being a threat issue, the Bible also says that when it came to the animals, which included dinosaurs, the man is the one who had dominion over them, not the other way around.
Genesis 1:26. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground."
As one man points out,
all of the animals were friendly and under man's control. None of the animals ate meat or killed. God provided the plants and seeds with all the vitamins people and animals needed. There was no sin, no death or evil or disease. In the original creation, dinosaurs were certainly not vicious or troublesome. When God finished making the animals, he said they were all very good. Originally, dinosaurs must have been harmless, designed to delight man and benefit the world, just like all the other animals.
Just like all the other animals, huh? Gee, I wonder if Adam and Eve had some for pets. It certainly makes you wonder just what kind of reptiles James was talking about when he mentioned various animals that man had tamed.
James 3:7. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles and creatures of the sea are being tamed and have been tamed by man.
The fourth way we know man and dinosaurs coexisted in a peaceful environment is because in the beginning dinosaurs weren't brainy. You see, the facts are, many of the dinosaurs may have come with big giant bodies, but many of them didn't come with big giant brains. And thus, they wouldn't have been the sharpest knife in the drawer, let alone much of a quick thinker that man had to be overly concerned about, as this article shares.
Most dinosaurs had small brains in comparison to the size of their bodies. The 29-foot-long Stegosaurus had a brain the size of a walnut. Even the great Apatosaurus's brain was not much larger than a kitten's. If a huge Brachiosaurus could be shrunk to the size of a human, its brain would be 10,000 times smaller than man's. This does not necessarily mean these animals were stupid as animals go, but they were surely no match for man's brain.
How many of you have ever been scared that one day a cow is going to chase you down and eat you? Yeah, the thought just doesn't ever enter your mind, does it? Well, gee, guess what? It probably didn't run through Adam and Eve's minds either when they really did one day coexist with dinosaurs. In conclusion,
before the flood, there is no indication in the Bible that any of the animals ate meat or were violent and vicious. It is people that God says were so terrible and violent. By the time of the flood, most animals must still have been able to live on plant foods alone. Every basic kind of land animal and bird in the world was on the ark. They ate only plants during the voyage. For God told Noah to load the ship with every kind of food the animals would need, Genesis 6:21. These foods must have been the same things God assigned to the animals in the beginning, every green plant. There is no hint that God changed this command between the time of creation and the flood. Before the flood, there may have been no need for animals to kill each other for food.
So much for being giant vicious meat-eating monsters. Looks to me like paradise really was paradise. Mankind not only coexisted with dinosaurs in a peaceful environment, but who knows, maybe they even had a few of them as pets. Wouldn't that be cool? What a world it must have been. But the third way we know that the Bible is right and evolution is wrong concerning the coexistence of man with dinosaurs is creation is not without proof. Now you might be thinking, well okay, if evolution has it wrong again and man really did coexist with dinosaurs, then gee whiz, you'd think that somehow somewhere we'd find some physical evidence of this coexistence, don't you think? Well hey, go figure. We do. Let's take a look. The first evidence that man really walked with dinosaurs is from human tracks where dinosaurs belong.
The May 25, 1969 issue of the Tulsa Sunday World carried the story of a curious fossil find made on a hilltop overlooking the eastern part of Tulsa, Oklahoma. The find was made by Troy Johnson, a field geologist of 13 years' experience, and though he showed plaster casts of his discovery to several experts, each and every one refused to accept it or its implications. Johnson had unearthed a sandstone strata filled with fossil tracks, many five-toed and distinctly human. The fact that a number of examples of these were overlaid by the tracks of now extinct creatures demonstrated that the man tracks could not have been of recent origin, but dated back between 3 and 5 million years. One remarkable man track find was reported in the Soviet journal, No. 8, 1961. In 1959, a joint Russian-Chinese paleontological expedition under the direction of Dr. Cho Ming-chen discovered in the Gobi Desert of Central Asia the fossilized print of a shoe with a ribbed sole. The find appears in sandstone dated at 15 million years. Members of the expedition who carefully examined the shoe print were quick to recognize that it was not the footmark of any animal, for the ribbing was too straight and regular to be of natural origin. But the out-of-place footprints go back even further in geologic time. The American Anthropologist, Volume 9, 1896, page 66, describes the finding of a perfect human imprint in stone about 4 miles north of Parkersburg, on the West Virginia side of the Ohio River. The track was 14.5 inches long, and was found embedded in a large stone. Though few specifics were given, one expert has calculated from the type of rock depicted, and its position on the river's edge, that the track must be at least 150 million years old, according to modern geologic dating. In the late 1970s, Dr. Rex Gilroy, director of the Mount York Natural History Museum of Australia, discovered a giant impress on Mount Victoria. One tentative estimate puts the track at 200 million years of age. One of the most remarkable tracks was found in Fisher Canyon, Pershing County, Nevada. On January 25, 1927, an amateur geologist named Albert E. Knapp was descending a small hill in the canyon, when he spotted the fossil laying topside up among a pile of loose rocks. He picked up the find and took it home with him. Upon closer examination, Knapp was astounded to discover it is a layer from the heel of a shoe which had been pulled up from the balance of the heel by suction, the rock being in a plastic state at the time. The shoe print was in a marvelous state of preservation. The edges of the heel were smooth and rounded off as if cut, and its right side appeared more worn than the left, suggesting it had been worn on the right foot. But what Knapp found really amazing was that the rock in which the heel mark was made was Triassic limestone, 225 million years old, which runs in a belt through the canyon hills he had been exploring. The rock was later examined by an expert geologist at the Rockefeller Foundation, who confirmed Knapp's analysis. The presence of minute crystals of sulfide mercury throughout spaces in the fossil also testified to it being of great antiquity. The real surprise about the age-old heel imprint, however, did not come until microphotographs revealed that the leather had been stitched by a double row of stitches. The twist of the threads is very discernible. One line followed along the heel's outer edge, and the second line paralleled the first precisely, inwards by 1/3 of an inch. What baffled investigators was the fact that this double stitching had been done with thread much smaller, and more refined in workmanship, than that used by shoemakers in 1927, when the fossil print was discovered. As Mr. Samuel Hubbard, honorary curator of archaeology of the Oakland Museum in California, commented, "There are whole races of primitive men on Earth today, utterly incapable of sewing that moccasin." What becomes of the Darwinian theory in the face of this evidence that there were intelligent men on Earth millions of years before apes were supposed to have evolved? In 1885, Professor J.F. Brown of Berea College, Kentucky was called upon to examine a puzzling find, made 16 miles east of the town of Berea, on Big Hill in Rock Castle County, one of the spurs of the Cumberland Plateau. Near the summit, an old wagon trail cut through a stratum of Carboniferous limestone, and removal of earth to widen the trail into a road had exposed a new section of this stratum. As E. A. Allen reported in the American Antiquarian, Volume 7, page 39, preserved in the layer were the fossilized impressions of several creatures. What mystified those who witnessed the remains was that among these tracks were two well-preserved prints of a human being. They were described as good-sized, toes well-spread, and very distinctly marked. It was not until 1930 that further and more detailed investigations were performed, this time by Dr. Wilbur Greeley Burroughs, head of the geology department at Berea College. Dr. Burroughs discovered a total of 12 9.5-inch man tracks and portions of others, and confirmed that they had indeed been impressed upon Great Pottsville sandstone dating from the Upper Pennsylvanian period, well over 300 million years old. Several geologists and paleontologists of the conservative school, in search of a face-saving explanation, declared the tracks not to be of human origin, but the marks of some as yet unknown species of amphibian. Dr. Burrow's research, however, proved otherwise. He described the configuration of the tracks this way, as quoted in the Louisville Courier Journal, May 24, 1953, of these, two pairs show the left foot advanced relative to the right. The position of the feet is the same as that of a person. The distance from heel to heel is 18 inches. One pair shows the feet parallel to each other, the distance between the feet being the same as that of a normal human being. Dr. Burrows concluded that the prints were made by a creature that was exclusively bipedal. Most amphibians and reptiles are quadruped, there were no four-leg prints. And those that have been known to walk upright on their hind legs, always do so with the tail acting as a tripod or third leg, to give balance. As Dr. Burrows carefully noted, nowhere were there signs of belly or tail marks in the examined stratum. Furthermore, Dr. Burrows and several of his colleagues performed a microscopic analysis of the man tracks, and based upon the grain count, established that the sand grains within each track are closer together than the grains immediately outside the tracks and elsewhere on the rock for the same kind and same combination of grains, due to the pressure of the creature's foot. The creature, they found, had exerted a weight pressure a little above that of a modern man. As the Science Newsletter of October 29, 1938 commented, no amphibian or reptile that size has been discovered in the fossil record that walked upright in the Pennsylvanian era. Finally, the clear impressions showing five toes, ball and heel are totally unrelated to an amphibian's or reptile's physical makeup, only man has a foot like that. Albert G. Ingalls, writing in Scientific American, January, 1940, declared, if man existed as far back as in the Carboniferous period in any shape, then the whole science of geology is so completely wrong that all geologists should resign their jobs and take up truck driving. On an outcrop of grayish-blue crinoidal limestone about 200 feet wide and extending along the west bank of the Mississippi for 3 miles just south of St. Louis, are a number of man track impressions which a century ago could be observed during low water stages. The early French explorers along the river were the first to note their existence, and ever since they have created a heated controversy. The first scientific observation of the prints was reported by Henry Schoolcraft in the American Journal of Science, Volume 5, for 1822, and he described them as strikingly natural, exhibiting every muscular impression, and the swell of the heel and toes, with a precision and faithfulness to nature I have not been able to copy. His colleagues dismissed the tracks as Indian petroglyphs, but Schoolcraft was convinced of their natural origin. They had been impressed, he carefully noted, not carved into the limestone. Whoever had made them, Schoolcraft also commented, had been of average size. The foot lengths were 10.5 inches, width across the outspread toes were 4 inches, and the heels were 2.5 inches wide. The American Antiquarian, Volume 7, pages 364-367, 1885, gave the account of another find associated with the St. Louis footprints that is perhaps even more disturbing. Quoting from pre-Sumerian antiquities, a particular set of tracks was described in detail. Then, directly before the prints of these feet, within a few inches, is a well-impressed and deep mark, having some resemblance to a scroll, or roll of parchment, 2 feet long by a foot in width. The squared impression was not a natural shape, neither were there scratch marks that would have indicated the patch had been carved. Rather, the evidence points to the parchment impression having been made when the rock was still in a plastic state, made at the same time as the footprints. What such a find suggests is that the prints' owners were not only men, but were men with the intelligence to produce some form of paper sheet, and perhaps write upon it. But as if this were not enough of a mystery, the limestone in which prints and paper appear, is dated to the Mississippian age, 345 million years ago. Still more finds of prints plunge mankind feet first even farther down into the geologic column. In 1948, a shoe impress was discovered near Lake Windermere, England. As reported in the Natural History Journal The Field for that year, the impress had been made in Ordovician limestone, an unbelievable 500 million years old. Remarkable too is the finding that the print bears signs of craft and artistry. Around the edge of both the heel and the foreshoe are circular impressions which resemble tacking, while in the center of the sole and heel are faint decorations of linear and flower-like designs. Though the impression is somewhat distorted in shape due to fractures and crevices in the rock surface, a measurement reveals an extended length of the shoe of about 8 inches and a width of 31.5 inches. On June 1, 1968, an amateur rock hunter, William J. Meister, of Kearns, Utah, was visiting nearby Antelope Springs with his family. The area, which includes the Swazi Mountains and the Cambrian Wheeler Shale Formation, is famous for its many fossils, and on this particular day Meister was on the lookout for fossilized trilobites and brachiopods, according to evolutionary theory, once among the oldest known living creatures. Meister broke off a rock slab, and, tapping its edge with a hammer, it fell open in two pieces, like the leaves of a book. To his great surprise, inside was a human sandal print, pointed in the toes, rounded in the heel, and with a squash trilobite in the center of the sole. The sandal print measured 10¼ inches long, 3.5 inches wide at the ball and 3 inches at the heel. The sandal appears to have been well worn on the right side, indicating it had been worn on the right foot, and the heel impression is deeper by 1/8 of an inch, characteristic of the weight distribution of humans on the foot. This particular find was later examined by Dr. Helmut H. Dulling, of the Utah Geological Survey, and he found no irregularities or evidence of fakery. The print was genuine. On July 20, Meister returned to Antelope Springs with professional geologist Dr. Clifford Burdick. Digging in the same locality, Burdick discovered another imprint in the Cambrian Shale, this time of a child. The print was 6 inches long, and the 5 toes were barely distinguishable, as if the child was wearing moccasins. Yet Burdick detected that the toes were spread out, indicating the child had only begun to wear shoes, which tend to compress the toes with age. The heel and arch were again well depressed, showing weight distribution, and a segment of a fossil was crushed in its middle. Burdick managed to find a larger fossil imprint, like Meister's original, though the impression was shallower, and also unearthed a second child's track, smaller than the first, with the toes broken off, but perfect in its other aspects. Later, a detailed examination revealed that the rock in which the prints were found was made of tiny layers, and where the footmarks occur, the layers were bowed downward from the horizontal, demonstrating that weight had indeed been pressed into the once prehistoric mud. But that prehistoric mud with its telltale prints is now Cambrian shale, an astounding 600 million years old. And the fossils and the prints are trilobites, supposed to be among the earliest forms of life on Earth. This time, we have literally hit rock bottom in the fossil record, and yet here we find the presence of man, and an intelligent, shoe-wearing man at that. How could he have evolved from simple life, when the Cambrian prints testify that he is as old as life itself? Skeletons of 10 perfectly modern humans have been excavated from 58 feet down in the Dakota Sandstone, over an area spanning about 50 by 100 feet. This formation is a member of the Lower Cretaceous, supposedly 140 million years old. It is known for its dinosaurs and is the same formation found at Dinosaur National Monument. At least 4 of the 10 individuals are female. One is an infant. Some of the bones are articulated. Some are not, appearing to have been washed into place. No obvious tools or artifacts were found associated with the bones. The bulldozer driver who uncovered the first bones in 1971 expresses certainty that there were no tunnels or cracks in the extremely hard overlying layers of rock. The bones are partially replaced with malachite, a green mineral, and turquoise, thus appropriately named Malachite Man. The evidence appears obvious that these 10 men, women, and children were buried rapidly by some catastrophe, like a flood. Articulated indicate rapid burial. Some propose to explain these bones by arguing that they were mining when the mine collapsed. However, there is no indication of tunnels, and women and small children would not likely be included in a mining operation. Additionally, no tools have been found and there are no crushed bones, which would be expected if the mine caved in. Another invalid explanation is that this is a mass grave and they were buried. This cannot be true because the living would have to dig a grave 50 to 100 feet deep through extremely hard sandstone layers. The modern mining operation was halted in the 1970s because the sandstone was so hard it was destroying the bulldozers. These humans appear to have been buried by the same catastrophe that buried dinosaurs in this continent-spanning formation. Humans and dinosaurs must have lived at the same time. Those people with an adventurous spirit would give almost anything to find a real, lived dinosaur somewhere in the world. But, of course, mainstream scientists say that is impossible. Evolutionists have long conjectured that dinosaurs were part of a theoretical great age of the reptiles about 200 million years ago. According to their theory, dinosaurs became extinct about 70 million years ago. And man did not evolve until about 4 million years ago. If this is true, no man could ever have seen a live dinosaur. However, some new discoveries indicate that man and dinosaurs may have lived together in the not-too-distant past. Modern man may have to totally rethink theories of how these great creatures fit into the history of the human race. A petrified finger was found in Cretaceous limestone that belonged to a prehistoric human. Broken short of the middle joint, it measures 7.6 centimeters, 3 inches. At full length, it would measure about 15 centimeters, 6 inches. Excavations of this limestone has also revealed a child's tooth and human hair. Sectioning reveals the typical porous bone structure expected in a human finger. CAT scan and MRI identify joints and trace tendons throughout the length of the fossil. Medical Dr. Dale Peterson of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma examined the sectioned specimen by means of X-ray, CT scan, and MRI. He was able to identify joints and to trace tendons throughout the length of the fossil. His expert conclusion is, there can be no reasonable doubt that this is a fossil finger. A fossil that corresponds perfectly to a human handprint shows astounding detail. Even the print of the thumbnail can be seen. It is found in the Glen Rose limestone, which is designated as Middle Cretaceous, supposedly 110 million years old and contemporary with the dinosaurs.
Now, keep in mind, the dates you just saw are based on the faulty evolutionary timescale, not the more accurate biblical one as we saw in the previous study, A Young Creation. With that said though, how does evolution explain these findings, these tracks where dinosaurs belong? Only the biblical account of the real origins and history of man and dinosaurs provides the answers. Man always lived with the dinosaurs. They were never separated, let alone by tens of millions of years. Oh, but that's not all. Just like you'd expect to find if man really did coexist with the dinosaurs, the second evidence that evolution is wrong and the Bible is right is from human tracks with dinosaurs along.
Recent examples of foot and shoe prints were brought to light in the 1970s, in the Carrizo Valley in northwest Oklahoma. The prints occur in both the Morrison Formation and Dakota Sandstone, supposedly over 100 million years old. The barefoot marks are somewhat eroded, but show evidence of definite pressure ridges. Several are in very close proximity to dinosaur tracks. The shoe prints are more clearly defined and reveal their wearers to have been above normal size, with the imprints averaging 20 inches long and 8 inches across the ball of the foot. Human footprints lie alongside thousands of dinosaur prints on a Turkmenian plateau, a Russian newspaper has reported. Journalist Alexander Bushev reported in the 31st of January 1995 edition of Komsomolskaya Pravda, one of the most popular newspapers of the former USSR, that he had journeyed to the plateau near the village of Kodgapil in Turkmenistan, and had seen the fossilized prints of dinosaurs and humans together. According to evolutionary theory, dinosaurs had become extinct long before humans first appeared on Earth. Bushev said that every meter of the half-kilometer-wide rock surface is covered by three-toed footprints made by giant dinosaurs making their morning or evening promenade along the ancient seashore. The Turkmenian plateau contains more than 3,000 footprints. Bushev said that Turkmenian scientist Kurban Amanyazov considers this Jurassic plateau to be at least 200 million years old. But the most mysterious fact, Bushev added, is that among the footprints of dinosaurs, footprints of bare human feet were found. He suggested that, because we know that humans appeared much later than dinosaurs, there was an extraterrestrial who walked in his swimming suit along the seaside. This report about dinosaur and human footprints on Kugatangtau Plateau is not the first. The news was reported to readers of the English version of Moscow News in 1983, number 24, p. 10. This was during a period when communists strictly controlled the ideological aspect of all publications, so an article of that kind could be published only with official commentary from a representative of official state science. The commentary they gave at that time was this: who knows, but maybe our very far-removed ancestors did mingle with dinosaurs. Science might possibly answer that in the affirmative sometime in the future, said Professor Kurban Amanyazov, head of the expedition. If we could prove that they do belong to a humanoid, then it would create a revolution in the science of man. Probably the most publicized man tracks are those found along the Palaxy River, near Glen Rose, Texas. They were first observed in 1908, after a flood washed away a portion of shore ledging, exposing geologic levels of the Glen Rose Formation, the Palaxy Formation, and the Twin Mountain Formation of the Trinity Group, all dated to the early Cretaceous, supposedly between 120 and 130 million years. Interestingly, these same rock types occur at Banira, not far from San Antonio, and there, too, human prints have been uncovered and documented. On the Palaxy, serious research into the mystery of the fossil prints did not begin until 1938, when Roland T. Byrd, of the Department of Vertebrate Paleontology of the American Museum of Natural History in New York City, removed a trail of dinosaur tracks that were alongside a series of what his eyes beheld with the official opposition, but admitted in the May 1939 issue of Natural History. No man ever existed in the age of reptiles, although the tracks are perfect in every detail. Byrd could only conclude that the prints he saw were those of some extinct ape, but this explanation was most unsatisfactory, since according to evolutionary theory, apes were not to appear for another 100 million years after the epoch of the Brontosaurus. The Palaxy site became a tourist attraction, and during the Depression, locals began excavating both dinosaur and man prints, and selling them for souvenirs. Some of the specimens sold were really hand-carved by the more unscrupulous opportunists, and unfortunately, in later years, conservative scholars were quick to point to these few examples of fakery as the answer to all the tracks discovered. But on-the-spot diggings by geologists and paleontologists have uncovered many new prints found in place that could not have been hoaxes, for they were discovered deep within the rock layers, and at times several feet back into the Palaxy banks, where no fabrication could possibly be made. The sum total of finds along the Palaxy reveal quite a mixture of man and animal types having lived all at the same time. There are heavy dinosaur tracks, the talon marks of the feared Tyrannosaurus rex, three-toed spores of other dinosaurs, and the imprint of a saber-toothed tiger, which was supposed to have lived only a few million years ago, not in the era of the giant lizards. As for the human prints, many are found in series, popping out of the Palaxy banks in a very natural stride, then wading into the riverbed. A good number of the prints are bare, with the large toe in particular clearly distinguishable. Others show signs of the maker's feet having worn some form of foot covering, like a moccasin or thin sandal. In one instance, in fact, the fossil print is so well preserved that the impression of the lacing on the moccasin is still visible. Some human tracks are of men of modern stature, with shoe sizes from 7 to 13, others are of children, whose prints are both proportionally smaller and shallower. Several more, however, are 16 inches, with a few of the men with 21 and 1-2-inch feet, and a 7-foot stride giants in the true sense of the word. The most remarkable fact of all, however, is that these prints are in the same layer as dinosaur tracks, and in a few instances, the human and dinosaur prints cross each other, showing that the two had been contemporary when the rock had been mud. The significance of these examples was noted by Dr. A. Wilder Smith of the University of Illinois. One authentic man track found in the same stratum as one authentic Brontosaurus track throws out 100 years of evolutionary teachings. It is sufficient to bring the whole Darwinistic theory down and revolutionize all biology today. Dr. Hilton Hinderleiter of Apollo Campus, Pennsylvania State University, studied the evidence presented at the Glen Rose, Texas excavations and stated, "I would have to say that the belief in evolution is in a state of terminal illness, but its death will only be admitted by a new generation of scientists whose minds have not been prejudiced by the type of education now prevalent in the nation's public schools, an education which starts with the belief that evolution has happened, which interprets all evidence according to that faith and simply discards any evidence which cannot be fitted into the evolutionary framework."
Why, if I didn't know better, I'd say we really do see evidence of man coexisting with dinosaurs. How about you? Looks to me like evolution not only got it wrong, but surprise, surprise, the Bible had it right all along. Go figure. And so here's the point. I'd say it's not only pretty clear that man really did coexist with the dinosaurs, but I'd also say somebody's doing a masterful job of trying to cover the whole thing up, you know what I'm saying? And gee whiz, I wonder why? Could it be that people would not only find out that dinosaurs came from the actual hand of God, but they would see they were also used to teach us to have a healthy fear of God, so we would get right with Him before it was too late? You know, folks, if I didn't know better, I'd say somebody's trying to keep people from the truth, you know what I'm saying? Gee, I wonder who that might be? People, please, don't miss the real purpose of dinosaurs. They weren't just big and fearful and came from the hand of God, they exist to teach us to have a healthy fear of God. Why? Because one day, people, you're going to stand before God and you're going to be judged by God, and He alone has the power to take you to heaven or throw you straight into hell. Hello? That's something to be fearful of. But that's right, if you don't want to take my word for it, then please, I beg you, listen to God's.
Proverbs 14:26-27. He who fears the Lord has a secure fortress, and for his children it will be a refuge. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, turning a man from the snares of death.
Oh people! I beg you. Please listen to words of King Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived. The fear of the Lord is not only a fortress for you and your family, but it leads you to eternal life instead of eternal death. And so I ask you. What's it going to take for you to stop being arrogant towards God and instead humble yourself before God and get saved through Jesus Christ, before it's too late? As you saw in this study, God is being gracious to us. He's given us the clear evidence that man did coexist with dinosaurs to show us that we can not only trust the Word of God, but that we need to have a healthy fear of God. Why? Because one day, people, when you least expect it, your life is going to be over. It's just one heartbeat away. And when that happens, you're going to be standing before Almighty God. And the Bible is clear. If on earth you had repented of your sins and asked Jesus Christ to forgive you, then you will go straight into heaven. But if you did not repent of your sins and you arrogantly mocked Him, you will go straight into hell. And so I beg you, please, please, won't you turn from your wicked ways? Won't you get right with God? Won't you escape the eternal judgment to come? People, please, this is not a game. All eternity is on the line and time is running out. Your death is going to be here before you know it, but by then it'll be too late. Please, cry out to God now. Humble yourself and ask Jesus to forgive you of your sins before it's too late.